So thanks very much for that introduction, Julie, and thanks very much for allowing me to speak at this as well, because all the ideas and the kind of discussion so far have been very, very rich. So there's a lot of things that I'm kind of thinking of at the moment and that are coming up, flowing from this as well. So just to kind of comment very briefly on some of the ideas, what Christian was saying about power and about nature as like a metaphor for that, and like trees, it just makes me think of tree power as a metaphor in the sense of as the tree, as the roots grow down and outward through the soil, the tree grows up, the branches go outwards and down, you know, go outwards and upwards and all over the place. So it's three-dimensional in that kind of sense, and that kind of breaks away in a certain sense from that binary logic and think about it in a certain sense. The pedagogy that Christian was talking about, egalitarian pedagogy, is really what I kind of see my own writings and workings as being within. And what I'm going to try and touch on at the end here touches upon that discussion about what utopia is and what we mean when we talk about utopianism. And the word or phrase I came across that I think is a great evocative phrase to describe what we might mean by utopianism and utopias is social dreaming. It's a dream that isn't individual in that sense. It's a dream that is collective action that place. And just the phrase social dreaming is a psychoanalytical term and an analytical psychological term to talk about dreams in a social setting and to talk about the sharing of dreams in that kind of sense. And I just kind of think that's one of the ways to conceive utopia is as a social dream. And I'll touch on that at the very end again as well, because that's the essential reality we're living within is a social nightmare, and is the nightmare of colonialism and imperialism and capitalism as well. And the last thing to kind of just register with this is that by talking about seeing and recognition and sight, you'll see that Rancière's work that I'm going to mention is talking about this as an epistemological and as an ontological process of thinking about recognizing and seeing things around us in that sense. So it's not necessarily literally about seeing all the time in that sense. It's also metaphorically and metaphysically talking about what we mean by when we're seeing. So there's three things that I'm going to try and talk about briefly in this talk for you. First of all, about the politics of visibility and recognition, as I was talking to or mentioned to you as well. Second of all, to talk about Jacques Rancière's work on the distribution of the sensible, or le partage du sensible, which is about distributions and aesthetics and about politics and about how these activate and how these things are experienced in the world. But Rancière was originally a Maoist and very close to Althusser. But really, his work is very on the fringes, I would kind of say, of Marxism in that sense, and is very close to kind of anarchistic concepts and ideas, especially through his idea of an egalitarian pedagogy, that there's a total equality of intelligences. So the idea of elitism in that kind of sense is kind of a non-starter to him because of that ability we all have in intelligence and an ability to learn things and understand what's going on around us. And so last, I'll then touch on recognition, solidarity, and visibility, and thinking about what the politics of solidarity is in that sense, and how we can kind of think about these kind of concepts and what Le Guin's work kind of contributes to as well. The last thing I would kind of highlight about this as well is that there's issues about really like resistance and the imperial gaze that are very integral, actually, I think, to what Le Guin is talking about in the novella. The act of seeing, the visibility and non-visibility in terms of beings, in terms of nature, in terms of the world around us, and especially what Joseph and Christian were saying about the world as forest and the conceptualization that goes on there. Because that idea of a struggle over recognition and a dispute over recognition and what is recognized as legitimate or not is a central axis, I think, of what Le Guin is kind of saying in the book. So, for example, in that novella, there's the word see and correlates of that word as well. There's about 100 times that occurs in the novella. So just the linguistics of the novel are kind of highlighting issues about what is seen and what's recognized by the Atchians and by the colonials who arrive there as well. And the colonialism and the colonials that are there are essentially, they have that a failure to see in that sense, that they can't see the world as forest because they see it as New Tahiti. They see it as World 41. They see it as, they see it through the lens of what they've brought with them and of the ideas that they've brought with them and the conceptualizations that they've brought with them. They carry with them Earth's problems, essentially in that sense of extraction, of exploitation, of violence, of essentially, I would kind of say, of a lack of social dreaming in that sense, a lack of ability to kind of see the collectivism that's inherent to human society and to human understandings, to humans as a group of things and objects in that sense. And the humans in that sense are forced by the Atchians and by Selvyr in that sense to recognize, to see the right of the Atchians to resist in that sense. And it is, you know, what's so fascinating about that or important about what Le Guin is kind of doing in that, I kind of think, is that aspect about what's lost in the usage of violence and what's kind of lost in taking up ideas like that as well. And that's, you know, there's a certain similarity or a certain sympathy to the way Marx talks about capitalists in Capital, because that's essentially the way that he kind of sees capitalists in Capital, is he sees them or explains them in a certain sense that they lose out in capitalism as well, because they lose out in the richness of what human kind of society could be, of what their own lives could be, instead of or because they subscribe to the ideas of kind of struggle as a capitalist view and as extractive, as appropriative in that sense. In one of the introductions to Le Guin's novella, Ken MacLeod writes that characteristically of all Le Guin's writing, the word for a world is forest embodies the stubborn virtue of seeing with both eyes, in depth and in colour, without looking from or ignoring uncomfortable truths. And as I said, what we're kind of talking about, or what I'm trying to talk about here, is about that seeing in a certain sense as metaphorical, as well as literal, as epistemological, as well as ontological in that sense as well. And one of the kind of fascinating aspects as well about Le Guin's work is both the Taoism and the kind of Eastern philosophies that enter into some of her writings and ideas and understandings, but also some of the analytical psychology that enters into her writings and kind of understandings of human psychology from that kind of aspect. And that's where I would kind of see Selvyr's position and Selvyr's kind of the tale that we're being told, the story that we're being told is mythological in that sense, and that it's you know, metaphorical, I suppose, is one of the ways that I would kind of see it in that sense. And it's kind of part of the storytelling in that sense of our societies. And essentially, because in analytical psychology, what essentially that story of Selvyr is the hero's journey in that sense, which is obviously you could call it the heroine's journey as well. And that's perhaps the kind of development we would want to see about it or develop out of it. And so he's part of a mythology, Selvyr, in that sense, or creates a mythology. But it's also about the kind of actions that he's then taking. And it's just, there's a very interesting kind of quote where Lubyov is talking about his understanding of Selvyr and what's happened after the first attack has occurred, or the revenge has kind of occurred of Selvyr against the members of the colonials. And he says that Shab meant God or numinous entity or powerful being. Of course, Shab meant translator. Were the two meanings connected? Often they were, yet not so often as to constitute. And I can't see the last of that quote at the end because of the video at the side here. So my forgiveness. If God was a translator, what did he translate? Selvyr was indeed a gifted interpreter, but the gift had found expression only through the fortuity of a truly foreign language being brought into his world. Was Shahab one who translated the language of philosophy, the men's tongue, into the everyday speech? But all dreamers could do that. might he then be one who could translate into waking life the central experiences of one serving as a link between the two realities, considered by the Amshians as connected, the dream time and the world time, whose connections, though vital or obscure, a link to speak aloud, could speak aloud the perception of the subconscious, to speak that tongue is to speak a new thing, to change or be changed radically from the root, for the root is the soul of all things. And so there's an idea there, I think, about that recognition and understanding and visibility going on. But to understand that visibility and what that kind of means, that's where I bring in Rancière's view of this, because Rancière has a brilliant phrase to describe the world around us and to describe workers' texts, to describe how we understand things. And it's this idea of the partition of the sensible. And one of the reasons why that term appeals so much and why I like it so much is that's where I grew up, Northern Ireland. Ireland is a partitioned island, and it is partitioned to this day through colonialism and imperialism. It still is a victim as well as a perpetrator of imperialism and colonialism, Northern Ireland specifically, but that part of Ireland in that sense. And as Rancière says here, le partage du sensible, which is translated usually in the English into distribution, but I prefer to translate it as partition instead because of that resonance with a colonial and imperial idea about these things. Le partage du sensible refers to the implicit law governing the sensible order. It sets the horizons and the modalities of what is visible and audible, as well as what can be said, thought, made, or done. In Rancière, the sensible then refers to both an order of knowledge, epistemology, and the place you occupy as a subject and your action, so the ontology as well about these things. And Rancière's terms, or where this philosophy is from the study of French workers' texts in the 19th century and research about egalitarian pedagogies in the early 19th century as well. And partage is then a partition is probably the best or the most accurate English translation of what partage means. But the vision is also, you know, equally an equally good way to translate it. And then distribution, I kind of think, is a more neutral way to understand or to translate that term partage. And so that's where kind of the problem of using distribution comes in, because it's actually, we're talking about how things are divided in the world around us, or how those that occurs in the way that we see things. And visibility and recognition then as a process of partition and division. And these terms are at the heart of modern political developments, which has seen the widening of political rights. Because obviously, in Aristotle, he originally claims that what separates the human from the animal, what separates the human from nature, is speech and voice. And only the former have speech. And there's really funny, quotes from the ancient Greeks where they say about, your slave can look at that and see the writing, but they can't understand it because a slave has no speech, or I only have voice. So you kind of have these funny things of, I wonder if they even believed that themselves, the ancient Greeks, or not. And so, you know, those terms that Aristotle kind of used or understands, but we've seen all of those expand and expand and expand. And the last then point to develop this out is to think about how Rancière understands politics and where politics comes into this struggle about solidarity and visibility and recognition as well. And so for Rancière, most politics is a policing action, actually. It's a domination which makes the act of politics impossible. And so essentially for Rancière, democracy is a short-lived phenomenon. It's something that only occurs at specific points in time when people act against the wrongs, when people say no, when people put themselves into the picture. That picture where they're excluded from or not seen, it's where they recognize themselves in that sense. And again, one of the reasons why this idea of a policing action and politics as the police appeals again is that that's colonialism and imperialism. That's what the politics of colonialism and imperialism is a policing action. And Northern Ireland's history, where I'm from, it is and always has been and still is to this day, even though there's a peace process and peace quote-unquote, in Northern Ireland, the peace is a policing action. The peace is policed as a consensus and as an imposed framework, just as imperialism imposed itself previously and violence imposed itself previously. But democracy is when those is the part of those who have no part. It's when those who have no part, the excluded, the unseen, the unheard, the unrecognized, act to right that wrong and put themselves into the actual reality around them, or into the world in that sense. And as I was kind of saying at the beginning there about holistic kind of ideas about this and thinking about power as a tree or as a metaphor as a tree in that kind of sense, that was just one of the things that really sparked in my mind by what Christian was kind of saying earlier on and thinking about power in a slightly different kind of way. So for Rancière, most politics we witness is not politics, it's police. It's domination, it's coercion, it's consensus, and a domination order which makes politics impossible, actually. And that then, thinking about visibility and non-visibility as integral to solidarity is actually very important, I kind of think then, because that's how we, I think, you know, facilitate certain of these things and encourage people, you know, as educators, as political activists, in that kind of sense, is giving people, is empowering people to have the tools, you know, to act for themselves collectively and individually in that kind of sense. And that's where, you know, that egalitarian pedagogy, I think, really then begins to come in. And it's not necessarily, you know, it's just that idea about the egalitarianism that's so significant. And as I said at the very beginning, what I kind of wanted to then finish on and think about is thinking about utopia as the social dream, because that's one of the things that one of the questions earlier on there, just before I started talking, was saying about people criticize the inability of us to imagine an alternative future or alternative futures. And I wonder about that. I kind of think that is pessimistic and is pessimism right now, actually. I think what we're living through is waking up from parts of the nightmare. Some people are beginning to really recognize what's going on in terms of the world around us and that it is a nightmare in that sense, and that it is changeable. There's reasons that it is the way it is, and that there are ways to also kind of change it. And so that utopia is a shared dream in that sense. And I really kind of think that what Christian was saying at the beginning and thinking about encouraging dreaming, encouraging creative thought, that's the point of education. I kind of think full stop is encouraging those kind of, you know, daring to learn something, daring to find out about something new. And that all of this, you know, is at least a two-way street in that sense. And that's where that kind of idea that Cheryl was talking about the binary logic of progress is really important, because that's where that distribution of progress is a two, you know, it's on a flat plane, it's on a sheet of paper. Progress, it's a straight line up. Accelerationism is following similar kind of problems. It's not holistic. It's not trying to view these things in, you know, a holistic manner, in an all-rounded manner, which is where again that metaphor of power as a tree might also become quite important, or is another way to frame these kind of things and to think about them. And so that's where I'll just end that, as the, you know, the politics of solidarity and how important actually it is recognizing those things, okay, and the visibility of others in that sense, and giving them the, you know, the framework in that kind of sense, and shutting up at the right time, such as now. So thank you very much for your time and for the invitation and allowing me to speak as well, because it's been very, very, all of the speakers so far, all the questions so far have been incredibly rich. It's very good. This is a Friday night here in England for us all as well. So it's actually a very enjoyable way to spend my Friday night, is getting, you know, my brain turned on in this kind of way. So thank you very much. I'll stop sharing the screen there. Thanks.